Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. I'm here not in the studio with James Eder. He is over in the United Kingdom. Well, in 2005, James founded the website Student Beans at age 22 alongside his brother Michael. 11 years later, Student Beans has gone from an idea to a brand recognized globally for its student offers and discounts. Known today as the Beans Group, the business also encompasses Voxburner. Voxburner is a youth events and insights consultancy. You also have an annual event, is that right? Youth 100?
Yeah, that's right. It's a big event over in New York and also in London. And it's one of the biggest events now, connecting people that are interested and understanding Gen Z, Gen Y, millennials, and all these bad words people keep hearing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And Voxburner employs a team of over 30 people and continues to recruit and grow. James is also the founder of Kentish Cluster alongside Camden Cluster. Camden Cluster is a community with events that brings local businesses and people together in London. James is passionate in helping people realize their potential. Public speaking topics such as marketing, entrepreneurship, and building a brand are his forte. And also in the short time that I've gotten to know you, James, I also feel strongly that you have a huge passion for connecting people and resources to make it easier for people to connect.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's really important. And I think the biggest thing in the last, 11 years is ultimately people do business with people. And that's just a really key behind every organization, behind every partnership, relationship, opportunity. It's the people that care, that make the decisions. And it's about making that connection that's so important.
I saw something on an article I was reading on LinkedIn about it's no longer about business to business or business to people. It's really human to human.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that completely resonates. And I think we forget sometimes, behind how we're so digitally connected that it's actually picking up the phone or having that face to face is still just so important. So yeah, human to human all the way.
And your latest venture is Causer.co, which builds on your passion of connecting people and business. So Causer.co is an app that you developed and is now available at Apple. It can be a game changer in social situations where you can connect with people around you and start a conversation if they're on the app, right?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, the basic premise was, a few years ago, sitting on the underground and there was someone sitting there and he had a CV, his resume in his hand, and I just turned and said, are you looking for a job? And short version, he ended up saying yes. And the premise, I guess, which was around what stops people often having these conversations. And the three pillars that we spoke about last time as well was kind of this permission, confidence, and context. And, so many times there are so many missed opportunities that surround us every day. And that was, I guess, one that I realized. But often people they don't feel like they've got the permission to talk. They don't have the confidence to do it. And, this context, if I knew someone next to me was an entrepreneur or was someone like yourself doing podcasts and interviewing entrepreneurs, then I'd be like, oh, hey, Nancy, I know you do entrepreneurs podcasts. It'd be great to chat. But often that just never happens. And so the idea is how we can use technology to enable more of those connections. We call them collisions, I guess. How can we enable people to collide and make things happen?
Yeah, and it makes life more richer and more fun.
Absolutely, yeah.
When you're finding ways to connect with people around you or when you're waiting for someone and let's say, they stood you up or they were running really late or something, it allows you to empower yourself to kind of drum up another conversation with someone else about something that could turn out, to be a business deal or, a different way that you collaborate or like you had talked absolutely about a fencing partners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what's really fun at the moment. I'm properly, I'd say, I'm living life to the fullest. And wherever I am, if I'm, you know, waiting somewhere, I'm proactively doing demos, showing people how this works. And just in the last couple of days, I was on the underground, and I showed someone this demo, and it turns out she was a journalist. She was actually flying out to Colombia that day. And I've actually spent a couple of months in Colombia, and it just showed you very quickly. I got to the context, and when I said, you know, can you see how this would work? She's like, oh, this is absolutely brilliant. Because at the moment, what people do is they go on Facebook and they go, I'm traveling to this place. Is anyone going to be here? Or I've landed here. Is anyone around? And that only shows it to your network or your own connections. And the idea is there are more people that surround us we don't know than we know, right?
Yeah.
So often in scenarios and situations. So how can we help facilitate that and enable people to connect? And so that was, again, just one example that's so exciting, the response we're getting.
Well, and, you know, I'm thinking also about stranger danger, you know, about young kids being taught to, you know, be afraid of people around you.
Yeah.
This actually invites people to really take a risk to get to know people.
Yeah, you know what?
And you can do some minor screening ahead of time.
Yeah, look, I think this screening, I think what's so interesting is we all understand, I'm sure every listener, you know, you understand why we're taught that, you know, phrase, don't talk to strangers. But then what's so interesting is that's so ingrained in us. And that then when we're expected to go into the world of work or we go to university, you know, what are we expected to do? We're expected to go and connect and network with these people and build your network. And it's just so polar opposite, I guess, to what's ingrained so much. And I think that's such a challenge of society, that it's kind of built these, you know, metaphorical walls, as it were. I think there's something interesting as well about tribes. If you think about it historically, people were much more defined in terms of, you know, what they wear. And, you know, very, I guess in, I say, olden days, you had, you know, army uniforms almost that you could see who was on whose side. And today we've got it in, you know, baseball, football. If someone's wearing a certain shirt, often that's an excuse to say, oh, hey, you support the same team and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so much now we kind of all blend together. So you can't tell almost which tribe people are in. And so that, I think, is almost by us becoming the same as then put up a greater barrier, because then we don't know. And then that stops often, I guess, a lot of this context. And so the idea is using technology to give that context back again is really, really important.
Yeah, and help people take risks, like learn how to minimize the risk, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you can take a risk and you can build in your skill set and also your intuition along with your experience with other people as you go along and you find your areas that you connect with them.
Definitely. I think in terms of that as well, there's a few things around it. One is you can see the name, the first name, and then the job title. So from a context, that's very powerful. And obviously trust is really key in this, but you can see the company. You can see also if they join certain groups, so if you've got something in common there as well. And that's the power of giving, you know, context. Just like the lady that I just spoke to yesterday about Colombia, like as soon as I knew she was a journalist, she knew I was an entrepreneur, you know, and if you reflect back and think without the app, the conversations that you naturally have, the faster you get to some kind of context and common ground, that immediately increases the level of trust. Like it immediately, like the credibility goes up instantly.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to supercharge, I guess, that in those moments, instead of sitting by yourself for half an hour or whatever in between meetings, or if you're traveling, maybe entrepreneurs and listeners, when you travel to an event, you might arrive the night before. And instead of sitting there eating dinner by yourself, you could go on and connect with people that are also attending the same event tomorrow. Like, how useful is that? Or also in the airport, it's such a huge, you know, opportunity to, you know, whilst you're waiting, to be able to connect with those nearby. And that's what we're, you know, the vision is, to be able to create those connections for people.
I sometimes don't, you know, want to be approached.
Sure.
Or I have to watch out for just feeling being taken advantage of, or a stalker.
Absolutely.
Or I'm thinking of women who are in abusive relationships. And let's say they both have an app. I mean, how would that work for them?
So it's definitely, like, you know, obviously in terms of awareness and concern. And I guess there are a few things about kind of features on it. The first one is you can actually only see the nearest 300 people. And so it's, you can't search specifically for people. And it's for, yeah, only 300. And the second thing is you're not on a map. So it shows you it's as close to 250 meters and then it goes out. So you can't see. So 250 meters is still, you know, a kilometer squared, right? It's still a wide enough area so that that's also not as specific. And you can also, you know, in terms of turning off the privacy settings, so your location isn't on and then you're not seen then in terms of your current location and where you are.
I see. So if you're in a place where you're feeling frightened, you just turn the app off.
Absolutely. And you know, like I guess the context is, you know, there are things like even on Twitter, when people are tweeting going, hey, I'm at this event, this is what I'm doing. You know, there's an element of location that already exists in that. Obviously, Facebook, people are very happy to post a photo of where they are, stamps, you know, and obviously people can recognize where people are. Like, so I do obviously appreciate and understand the concerns. You know, I think though, like, genuinely people are good people. Like, people do want to connect, and there's an element of that. But there's also, you've got your company, you've got, you know, that context, again, those different layers and levels. And you can also block people. So within the app, if, you know, if someone's not appropriate or, you know, it's not relevant, whatever, then you can block them.
That's a great feature. Yeah.
So it's just a really, you know, again, we've covered, I say, the bases with it. You know, and our whole intention is how we can enable people to create meaningful connections and really make a difference for people. And so, you know, we genuinely want to create a community for people that, that they can land anywhere in the world and be able to form and facilitate a connection that will really be useful and make a difference. And I think something interesting and a tangent that I've not mentioned yet was, in my block of flats in London, there's 25 flats, it's about 40 people. And this is also maybe a, talk about entrepreneurship and a minimum viable product, like just testing something. And I think advice for anyone listening, if you've got an idea and you're not sure how to develop it, my question would be for you is like, what's the next step? What's the first thing that you can do to try and see if your idea works? Is it put out a questionnaire? Is it to ask some people? Is it, what is it, that first next step? And about 3 years ago, I moved into my new block and no one spoke to each other. It was very isolated, you know, and I was living here for about 9 months and I just thought, this is ridiculous. I'm going to invite everyone to Christmas drinks. So that was my first kind of, I printed some invites. I was so excited about it. And I just said, right, just do this and I'll make it formal. And if people come, that'd be great. And so I printed them and it was really fun. And about 15 people came and, you know, we met and they met each other and it was like really great. And someone said, oh, we should set up like a residence association thing. And then I thought, you know what, why don't I set up? And I ended up creating a WhatsApp group for the building. So I just went around and I knocked on everyone's door and I was like, you know, if they came to Christmas, it's great to see you. But if they didn't, I was like, oh, you know, sorry, you can make it, but I'm James. And I sent the invite around. But would you like to be part of the WhatsApp group? And what was amazing is the community properly has come together. And in the last 3 years, there has been every conversation from I'm going away, does anyone want to raid my fridge? To I'm does anyone want to play squash? To an elderly lady needed help with her computer that she didn't know how to do it. My printer's broken at the moment, so my flatmate needed someone to print, so we just posted on there, can someone help me print something? And all of these just like general day-to-day things and like deliveries and my car's broken down, can someone help? And just amazing community. And this is, some people have lived here for 9 years and like never spoken to anyone. And, you know, their feedback is you have like, this has transformed the community. And I guess it, for me, it's an important, I guess, message to share for a number of reasons. Aside from leading into Causa and, you know, that I guess from a vision, our vision is to create millions of meaningful connections for people nearby all around the world every day. Oh. And like, that's where we want to go. This is, you know, and the grassroots started with, imagine if I can land anywhere and feel like I've got the same connection with people that I do in my flat that we've created on WhatsApp. Like, that is the kind of world I want to live in. Well, that's what I want to create.
Yeah. We have a app in our local community. It's called Nextdoor, and you can connect with your neighbors.
Yeah.
And so things are sold and, you know, come on over to my house. I need help with this or a lost cat or dog. Or so I'm getting a clearer picture of, you know, like in the neighborhood, how this app can work. I think your uniqueness about your app, Causer Co., is that it's wherever you are at.
Absolutely. And what's so interesting is Nextdoor has just launched in England like 4 months ago.
Oh, really?
And just this week, they've taken over another company called Streetlife, which was the UK version. And so I love it. And obviously, it plays into everything that I'm talking about. But I completely agree. There's like this almost overlap with like what we're doing, you know, and the concept I've just shared about the WhatsApp group, but what they're doing for neighborhoods. But the fact is, if I land in New York, how cool would it be if I could see that there was also someone from my neighborhood in New York, and then we go out for dinner there, which sounds quite random, but it's that overlap and that context of not just when obviously you're at home. So spot on, you know, in terms of what you shared and that.
I was also That's the beauty of having like a variety of apps in like what you're saying, you know, to have the Nextdoor app and your app that you can kind of close the gap. With figuring out who you know.
We Mentor.
But I was also going to share just from a leadership perspective, which you asked me a question earlier about. And, you know, for me, creating the WhatsApp group is also, I guess, a form of like personal leadership that has made a difference for the community. And from a listener's perspective, I'd ask you listening to try and think, like, what is one thing you could do today that would make a difference for other people? And, you know, so many people I've met are like, oh, I'd set up a WhatsApp group, but there's that one really annoying person in my building that if we do, then there'll be problems. And you create an excuse why you're not going to do that. Actually, the greater good for doing it will transform your community. Like, and I know Nextdoor now, maybe the WhatsApp group is now, you know, you don't need it anymore because Nextdoor is there and they're doing great things. But I think it's about that cool, you know, I don't think we can rely on, I guess, from a big society perspective, relying on governments, relying on people, actually bring it down. Like, what can we do as a community? But then what can I do as an individual?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really powerful. But in an individual of how I can contribute. How can I make a difference for me and then those around me?
That fits also with the concept of doing random acts of kindness.
Absolutely.
The two kind of go hand in hand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love, just the random acts of kindness. And I've heard so many fun stories of like, if you're in the cinema line going to see a movie, paying for the tickets for the people next that are coming next.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes.
Or leaving a note in a book for someone, or passing a book forward, or there's just so many different like ideas and things that you can do. And you know, it's just thinking about what else is going on, and we're so often caught up in our own worlds that it's kind of difficult for us to forget, you know, what else is going on around us.
Yeah, and I think it is important, like if you're feeling really lousy, to really turn it around to say, what could I, you know, I'm feeling lousy. Okay, fine. You know, there it is. But what could I do to brighten someone else's day that, you know, then also lifts you up? You know, how can you be still, you know, upset when you're, you know, making someone else happy?
Yeah. So, you know, it's so true actually about how you can help and make a difference for people. And just the other day I was walking down the street and there was someone that just arrived. You could see she was struggling with her bags and people were just walking past. And I just said, you know, can I help you? Like, do you need a hand? And she's like, oh, that'd be amazing. And she's like, oh my God, you're such a lifesaver. Like you could see she was just so appreciative in that moment. And yeah, I just think it's about, you know, thinking again, as people, we get so unfortunately wrapped up in our lives and what we're doing. And you take a step back and just think, look, how can you help or make a difference? And it's as small as smiling or asking the, you know, shop assistant, how are you doing? Or, you know, making that conversation, or just, there are just small things that I think if we're more aware, we could just do, and that would make a big difference and go a long way.
Yeah. And look up from our phone, you know, when we're checking out in the cashier line and just look around us. Yeah. Yes. Can you tell me a little bit more about, like, what prepared you to launch your first venture with your brother, Michael?
Yeah, I think there are a few maybe like key defining moments. One of them sounds quite funny, but I ended up working for telesales for selling bingo. So it was like a night for bingo halls, but I had to call up people. And I was told, like, I had to call around 250 people every single day. There was like this automated system. It was around an 8-hour shift. And the reason why I share that story is, like, I call it kind of no training instead of sales training, because we had to get people to say no 3 times before we were allowed to kind of say, okay, thanks, and put the phone down. And the challenge that, you know, I don't know, Nancy, how about you? Like, when someone says no to you, how do you feel?
It depends upon what it is.
Fair enough.
But like if I'm working with a client, I just want them to join a group or work with me individually. You know, I don't want to hear no.
Fair. Yeah. So look, I think we don't like that word no, and the relationship generally to no isn't very positive, right? If, you know, listeners, you're asking someone out on a date and they say no, or you know, you want a business deal and they say no, and it's hard, and we don't deal with rejection very well. And I think, you know, the most successful entrepreneurs, they hear, you know, the word no, and it's like, okay, what can I do to get to a yes?
Right? Exactly.
They don't take no for an answer. And I think when we're kids, we're very good at, if you want something, we just keep going, we keep going, we keep going. But then that almost gets beaten out of us. And then when we ask, you know, then they say no, and you're like, oh, okay. And then you move on. And actually hearing and going through that lesson when I was like 18 again, to hear no 700 times a day for 6 weeks was the best training I could ever have. And giving me that grounding that if I hear no, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the learnings are no, I can convert them to yeses as well. Like every day I convert around 10% of my audience would say yes. So even if it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I'd only have 5 people sign up, I knew that if I just kept going and I got through those no's quicker, I'd get to the yeses.
Yeah, I used to do telesales for the Minnesota Special Olympics. For 5 hours, I would be dialing, you know, on the phone, and there was a script, and the manager had asked, you know, you're in a room with a group of other people. You're all on the phone. He said, is there anything special I can, you know, get you while you're on the phone? And I said, I just want a window view. So he put me in a room which had like a 3-inch slit where you could see outside, you know, every, you know, 200 or so feet. So I was, you know, able to see through that slit, you know, out the window. But the first week I was really got into a groove and I really became good at it. And by the second week I was number one in the state. And then I'm like, wow, well, if I could be number one in the state, I wonder what is the, you know, the record for the national telesales. And, you know, so I worked to that. So I worked there for 5 months. And when I reached my goal, which was the last week I was there to break the record nationally, then I was like, okay, done with this job. But it was so good for getting donations because it's a non-tangible thing that you're trying to get from people. But it helped me to really get comfortable with where people are at. And like you were saying, getting people to say no 3 times. In the telesales script, there was like when the first no comes up, what to say. Then there was when the second no comes up, what to say. And then the third no. And then it's like, okay, you know, once they get to the third no, you know, then the deal's done. But people hate telesales people. And so that was my little mantra was to say, well, maybe I can be the one telesales person that they actually like. And they were, you know, doing something great for the Minnesota Special Olympics. But anyways, I really can relate with having jobs that are very difficult, where you're faced with a lot of rejection can be the greatest training ground for entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. And I'd encourage anyone, you know, considering or kind of thinking, you know, whether it be career and what they want to do, is to get those kind of experiences under your belt. It's just so powerful. And, you know, often working in a customer service role, in a restaurant, in a shop, wherever, it like it's amazing that learning actually can be really, really transferable, and it's underestimated, I think, for a lot of people. And I remember actually speaking at an event a few years later, and I was sharing with the audience about, I did my sales script for them and the successes and what I learned from it. Anyway, I sit down and the next speaker comes up and goes, James, you know, that was really great. And I wonder, you don't know who's in the room, do you? And I go, I don't know who's in the room. And it was actually the chairman of Gala Bingo, the bingo company that I was working for. And the chances of this were just absolutely ridiculous. And he joked saying he was going to offer me a job. And I said I was a bit busy doing other things, but thank you very much. And he said it sounded like I was one of the most successful salespeople that they had had on the phones and stuff. But it was just, you know, an amazing serendipity story again.
And you started that because you were going to describe something about how that kind of helped you with your brother Michael.
Yeah, look, I think the foundations, you know, in terms of the questions, like what are the things that gave me, that was one of the definite things that like prepared me like hugely for doing that. I think I also, when I was a student, I ended up, you know, using almost an excuse while I was a student to contact companies to work with different brands. And I ended up organizing a summer ball, which was like a 24-hour party for students, and ended up contacting a lot of companies to get free sponsorship, free, you know, we talked about the lifetime value of students. And I actually convinced, it was News of the World at the time, actually, to give us newspapers. So we had karaoke breakfast, where we would have people singing karaoke. And at breakfast, I thought, how great would it be if we can get a Sunday newspaper and give everyone just a Sunday newspaper? It's just a fun, free perk. But it's something that the, you know, the newspaper company, then they're getting their brand in front of 600 students. That can't be a bad thing. And anyway, I called the Times, I called various companies, but the News of the World agreed to do it. So at 7 a.m, they delivered 600 newspapers. And I've got this amazing picture of these 600 students, like, all, like just reading, you know, people are tired and they're just kind of flicking through the newspaper. But I took a great picture of that. And I was doing a presentation a few years ago, and someone came up to me at the end of the presentation and they said, I was the guy you called from News of the World. And I had convinced him, and he said to his team, look, we're doing this because it's a useful thing. And all my team were like, oh, you know, I don't see the point or whatever. But actually, I mean, it just demonstrates the fact that I was still sharing that story and sharing that picture, you know, 6-7 years on. And the fact that I met him, it was just, again, I can't make it up, right?
Right. That's great. Well, how did it go when you had the conversation with your brother that you were leaving Student Beans?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I think over time, you know, setting up and running a business are two very different things. And I think it's important for entrepreneurs to be aware of when the right time is and what it is that was driving them. And I think I, over the years, so the last 3 years or so, I'd been, before I left the business day to day, I phased out kind of, I wasn't managing anyone. So he stepped into the role as managing director. When we founded the company, I was commercial director and he was the operations director. And then over time, because I was so externally focused, I was doing a lot of business development partnerships and I was traveling a lot for work as well. So it just made sense that I didn't have a team directly reporting into me and that he would take over. So it fortunately didn't come as such a surprise. And we'd been having conversations. It's normally every year, normally around my birthday, when I'm reflecting, thinking, I'm here, what do I want to do? Do I want to be doing this? And normally in the last few years, my role's evolved and I've kept doing, I guess, new things, and it's almost promoting yourself. You keep evolving, so things need to happen.
Yeah. And how did you generate the money to start up?
So for Student Beans, we got a low interest loan in the UK. There was something called the Prince's Trust that actually Prince Charles is involved with. He does some amazing charity work that is completely, a lot of people don't appreciate or know, but the Prince's Trust help a lot of startups and young people create businesses. And they gave us a £3,000 loan at the time that we had to pay back every week. And we got a mentor and support. And that was transformative. That was fantastic. And then I actually didn't come up with the name. Michael came up with the name. And the name Student Beans, in England, we've got baked beans on toast, are like this staple diet. Oh. And so the idea then student beans to be a staple for student life. And it's worked really well for us over here. I know maybe it's more noodles in the US. what do you think? Is it ramen? Yeah. Is it, you know, noodle ramen stuff maybe? But anyway, you know, it seems to be working as well. So we now are in the US and we're in over 20 countries now. So from those foundations, and that's really awesome.
That is awesome. So do you have any connection with Student Beans at all? Do you have any shares in the company or did you totally give those up?
Yeah, so I'm still kind of part owner of the business and Michael and I, when we started it together, and I think, you know, I'm so proud. I'm so excited about what they're doing. And I think it was an important signal as well to people. I've not left them I'm still a director and on the board, but I'm not operational at all day to day. And actually we subdivided our office. So the office, there's one part of it for Student Beans and the Beans Group. And then we've got a studded wall and I'm actually working on the other side of the office. So I keep hearing the cheers and successes and excitement from next door, which kind of gives me a bit of buzz as I'm starting again to know and hear that they're doing such fantastic things. I'm so proud and so humbled that, you know, I've created something that has a legacy in terms of what they're doing and created. And, you know, it's great to still be at arm's length involved, and we have our catch-ups and we see each other from family time and stuff, and you know, I'm always at the end of the phone for them and, you know, happy to help. So yeah,
that's great. Well, we're at the end of our second conversation. I still would like to talk with you about the Kentish cluster and a little bit more about your life in general. Would you be up for one more podcast session?
Sure.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course.
Oh, terrific. All right. So you heard it here, audience. James Eder is going to join us for another session. So stay tuned. And thank you, James, for being our mentoring guest. And thank you, Mike Cabea, our sound engineer and photographer, and always a good friend. So we'll see you next Monday. And everybody, take care and do something great for somebody else today. Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.